So we will spend the majority of today discussing baseball, and specifically the Toronto Blue Jays, and lots to talk about there with more injuries, Tellez being sent down, Springer comes back, and the Blue Jays get walloped by the Washingtons yesterday. But the Toronto Maple Leafs went out and won themselves a hockey game again over the Montreal Canadiens and secured their playoff berth, which is of no consequence, Shannon, because we all knew that that was imminent. And it appears, there's no guarantee, but it appears that the most likely matchup in the first round is Toronto-Montreal, which will be intriguing for those of historic nature, significance, any Toronto-Montreal series you would perceive to be of some value. But is it really competitive? Do the Montreal Canadiens have anything that can compete with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, not right now. And I tell you what, Bob, you know, any time that you would mention it's going to be Montreal versus Toronto, it had to be on the shoulders of Carey Price. And even though Carey Price is back practicing a little bit, he's feeling better. There's no guarantee that Carey Price will be ready for the playoffs. And right now, with the way that Montreal is playing, this could be a very short series. And right now, the Maple Leafs are playing, I would suggest, some of the best hockey of the season in the last 7 to 10 days. Even though prior to the
trade deadline, their worst.
And around that trade deadline, they were playing some of their worst. So yeah. That's the roller coaster of this darn division, Bob. You know, I mean, look at Winnipeg now. Winnipeg. Who were, you know, viewed as somebody that was really going to be a fixture in the playoffs, and they've now lost 5 in a row, losing again last night to Edmonton. And there's lots of question marks in Winnipeg now.
So, well,
but it certainly looks like the first two round matchups in the North are Toronto, Montreal, and Edmonton, Winnipeg.
I might even go so far, Shannon, as to suggest that Edmonton might be a slight favorite over Winnipeg in that series if it started tomorrow, for example. Now, what happens in the last 7 or 8 games will go a long way to determining that, I understand. But right now, I kind of like Edmonton in that series.
Well, they've beaten the Jets 7 of 9 times this year, Bob. Connor McDavid has, I think, 23 points in 9 games. The Jets, as good as they are, as deep as they are, with really good goaltending and a good forward group, they have a tough time managing what McDavid does on the ice. And that's Paul Maurice's biggest issue right now. So, you know, you're right on. I mean, right now, Edmonton's playing great hockey, and they can play it different ways right now. They can play the tight checking games like they occurred Wednesday night, or they can play wide open hockey like they did on Monday night, and they won both games.
Are you comfortable that we know the top 4 teams in the Canadian division? Are we
yeah.
at that point now?
We are within a decimal point, I think, of knowing that it will be Toronto, Montreal, and Edmonton and Winnipeg playing in the first round, yes.
All right. Let us get on to our guests, a couple of guys who have covered baseball for an extended period of time, and we'll address the pros and cons of the Toronto Blue Jays first, I can't remember, is it 21 or 23 games? I know they're a game under 500. It hasn't been all bad, but it has been somewhat surprising in the positives and the negatives, and we'll address all that. Rob Longley, Dave Perkins will join us after these messages. And we are back, yours truly, Bob McCown, along with John Shannon, who joins us remotely from Edmonton, Alberta.
That's not remote. That's not remote.
Well, if you're in Toronto, it's remote. It's very remote.
Well, hold on now.
But you're not as remote as Longley is. Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun is in where? Medicine Hat?
Medicine Hat, Alberta. Parts unknown.
On his way to Calgary. Why did you stop in Medicine Hat? It's not that much further. You could have made it all the way, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, a 13-hour day was enough.
All right. And Dave Perkins, I assume you're at the home office?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Lovely to see all of you. Let's talk about this Toronto Blue Jay team. I don't know, where are we? An eighth of the way into the regular season. We saw the return of George Springer last night, although not in the fashion and manner or position that we had hoped or anticipated. He was DHing last night, which, Perk, I think makes some sense. I mean, guy's got a quad problem or had a quad problem. You sure don't want him to go out and play one game and take a misstep and screw yourself up. But at the same point, if he'd gotten on base, he would have had to run. So really, what was the difference?
Well, you can't protect these injured guys. And, you know, they have two guys go down every single day. So it's just a question when his number comes up again, I guess, the way it is. You know, and every time there's an injury, they say, oh, he'll be fine tomorrow. He won't miss a start. And then a month later, he plays his first game of the year. You know, it's crazy. Like, Ryu was fine. Oh, no, he's fine. It's just a little tweak. Now he's on the DL. When we're going to see him in June. Like, it's crazy that they spent $100 million on this facility to keep everybody healthy. And guys go three innings, get hurt. And they tweak their hamstring, they tweak their muscles. They need a review of their practices. I'll tell you that.
Hey Dave, it's a nice new hot tub. It's a good dietitian center. It's not Lourdes.
I understand that. But you know, when I started covering this team, half the players smoked. Everybody ate candy bars and potato chips, and they went. They had three guys a season go on the DL. Now they get four a week. It's nuts. It's not a game for fit, muscular athletes. It's a game of hand-eye coordination and skill. It's not a physical game. It's not the NFL. It's not the NBA. It's not hockey. Fat guys have always been able to play, right, and hit and do things and pitch and you didn't have to be in fantastic shape to play baseball. You had to have kind of loose muscles, for want of a better word. Those guys with the short, blocky muscles, you know, they were always pulling them, and now you got the weightlifters and the oblique strains and all this stuff. It's wild. I digress.
Well, does this come down, Rob? I'll throw it to you. I mean, is this too much emphasis on training?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if you guys noticed, but about a year or two ago, a year and a half ago, the Blue Jays dropped their big designation of the high performance department that they had, because they were getting mocked about it. All these guys that would be going on the IL because of soft tissue type injuries, right. and they were getting lambasted for it. And right. To Berkey's point about Springer, I think it's a very good one, because George Springer reminds me a lot of Josh Donaldson, two guys who are very fit, very muscular, but not necessarily baseball muscular. And they're always going on the injured list. George Springer hasn't had a year in the last five where he hasn't had some sort of soft tissue injury. And here it comes again. And, you know, when they said it's going to be a week, I don't think anybody could believe that it was going to be a week. At first it was the oblique, and then it went to the quad. I mean, what's next for the guy?
And the other thing about Donaldson, since you mentioned him, is what did Donaldson say here? What was his lament when he kept getting hurt? Donaldson said, I averaged 158 games a year until I got to Toronto. Yep. And then the high performance people took over, and I've been no good ever since.
Yeah.
But that's what he said. You know, and he ain't the only one. When everybody who leaves the organization badmouths the medical part of it, what does that tell you?
Well, but it's not necessarily doctors or trainers. It's the philosophy, isn't it, of the organization?
I agree.
Agreed, 100%. I mean,
well, as a guy who doesn't follow the team that closely, I mean, how would it differ from the Dodgers? How would it differ from the Mets? I mean, what would this group of people be doing that is different than any other major league team?
Well, I don't think anything. I think everybody's got this. I mean, the number of DLs is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And to me, it goes back to this mandate that unless you throw 95 miles an hour, you're not a pitcher. So you got all these guys that they hump up and they get the 95 miles an hour, like Jordan Romano, and you go three innings and you're hurt. You last three innings and you go on the DL. Or four innings or 10, whatever it is, some ridiculous number. to me, it's this overemphasis on, you know, speed above all.
Well, we can certainly put a lot of players in that category. I'm not disagreeing with you guys in any way, shape, or form. But in terms of Ryu is not he does not exactly have a, you know, sprinter's body or a weightlifter's body. He is a pretty normal looking, walking around.
He has a broadcaster's body.
He does. Right, you're right. And he doesn't throw overly hard. You know, he barely hits 90, and he doesn't even try and throw hard. So is he an outlier? He's not part of the problem. He's just a guy, one of those guys who just gets hurt from time to time. Is that the answer there?
I think so. I mean, but he does have an injury history. I mean, he's spent a
long
of time
one. Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's inherent to just his own physicality or the way that he trains, but you know, in one sense, the Jays did buy damaged goods when they signed him. I mean, that was always going to be a risk with him, and it was always going to be a risk with Springer. And then if you get them into a facility and a program where you may overtrain, then you're just asking for these kind of injuries.
Well, at some point, Shannon, we'll have to have Shapiro on to address these questions. And of course, he'll deny all relevant.
Actually, it's Ross's turn to come on next. So,
well, either one.
Yeah.
I don't want to nitpick here. This team is a game under 500 after losing last night. And all things considered, that's okay. But it isn't. They are not doing it the way we thought they would do it. We thought that this team would have to win games 7-6, 8-7 because their pitching wasn't going to be good enough, but their offense was going to be plenty good enough to keep them in games. The truth is the reverse. The pitching actually has been pretty good, and the hitting has been mediocre at best. Take away Guerrero and
Bichette.
Yeah.
Bichette. I mean, they both done okay, haven't they?
Yeah, well, Biggio struggled the early part of the season.
Biggio's been bad.
Yeah.
Uriel's terrible. The catching's horrible.
Let's go to the right to the catching because I think we have to address that. With due respect to Danny Jansen can't hit major league pitching, has never hit major league pitching, and shows no signs that he's ever going to be able to hit major league pitching. And so the excuse for Danny Jansen has always been by the organization that he's such a good defensive catcher that they can put up with that and tolerate that. Can you? Should you?
Perk. I don't think you can when Gurriel's hitting $1.20 nobody else is doing much outside of the two guys you mentioned. And even they've been a little spotty, a little bit. You know, Guerrero had the great game this week, but, you know, four of his last five of just baseball, you know. But to me, the catching thing, this goes back to having a 14-man pitching staff. There was no way on God's earth that Danny Jansen should bat in a critical situation in the game. And yet you can't pinch hit for him because you only have two catchers. And you don't have anybody to pinch hit with anyway because you got a two-man bench, right? So because they're carrying so many pitchers, so many relievers, you got no bench and you got to live or die with a guy. What's poor Jansen? He's like 2-for-44 or whatever it is. Like, it's ridiculous. So, and Kirk was supposed to be a hitter and he isn't hitting either. So it's, I mean, it goes up and down a lineup. Charlie can't manage this team, offensively because he's too busy managing the 14-man pitching staff and the three guys at the alternate camp and the three guys on the DL. He's too busy with a 20-man pitching staff to manage the team.
Longley?
Yeah, it becomes a real issue. And, you know, all the talk we heard in spring training was how deep this order was, 1-9. Okay, so if you have 8 and 9 not hitting and then you turn it over to George Springer, what's the use of that? I mean, it's going to be, it has been a dead zone. And until Danny Jansen starts hitting, it's going to continue to be a dead zone. Perk's hit 0-for-34. He's one more away from the record. If he goes 0-for-35, he'll match Ed Sprague's club record. And, you know, last night, what did he do? He dropped the glasses for the contact lenses. That speaks to me as a desperate man. He's, But it's not just this year. As Perk said, he's proven that he can't hit major league pitching. And you can't afford to have that dead zone at the bottom of the order with this type of a lineup.
Well, and I think that was my point too, that, yeah. You know, at the beginning of his career, you could make the argument, okay, he's intimidated by major league pitching. He'll learn, he'll get better. He's not getting better. I'm not suggesting he's worse. I think what we've established here, I think we've now firmly established over a few years, is he's not going to be able to hit major league pitching. Now, could he get his batting average to 200? I guess, bunch of seeing eye shots. But are you okay? Is anybody okay with a catcher? Is there a catcher out there that's good enough defensively to mitigate a 200 batting average with negligible power? And the answer, I think, is no.
No, except half the teams in the major leagues got somebody like that. So
one of the Molina brothers, you know?
Yeah. But baseball front offices, that's the philosophy now. They say, okay, be good defensively, but most importantly, or almost as importantly, manage the pitchers. That's all we hear about, how catchers manage pitchers so well, yeah, and they call a good game. But that's not enough. You can't hit 175, .175, and be okay defensively and manage pitchers. You need more production.
I agree.
There's a cup half full here, guys, because as much as everybody thinks that this team is sputtering along at 11-12, I mean, the pitching has been better than everybody anticipated. Up until last night, Mats was really good. And so everybody talks about you got to wait 40, you got to wait 60 games in Major League Baseball before you start to press the panic button. If this team turns the batting around and perhaps turns what's going to happen behind the plate, this team's not in that bad a shape, is it?
Well, we agree, John. We don't disagree with you, and I think in principle. I'm pointing out the Jansen situation because there's no reason for optimism that he's going to be able to turn it around. I assume he'll get a hit at some point in his life. I don't think he'll go 0 for the rest of his career unless they end his career. I'm just trying to point out this is a position where they are giving up a substantial amount of offense in order to have a guy who is, I mean, is he a great catcher? Is he great defensively? I don't think so. I think he's okay.
He's fine. He's a good major league catcher, but he's not.
And one of the guys, you guys are talking about relationship with the pitcher. We hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, how difficult is that? How is that a skill set that allows you to be in the major leagues when you can't hit a fastball that's right down the middle? Is there something really unique about Danny Jansen and these pitchers? Are these pitchers standing up and saying, I would rather pitch to Danny Jansen than Johnny Bench? You know, I mean, I don't hear that. I think it's just a bunch of excuses and trying to take, you know, some of the heat off Jansen. And I get it, but I don't think it's real.
And further to what I was saying earlier, like they sent down Tellez yesterday. I mean, with the game on the line, wouldn't you rather have Tellez up there swinging a bat than Danny Jansen? I mean, Tellez, he's been a major league hitter. He run into one. He's got power. He's, you know, you can get him out, sure, but you can get everybody out.
Well, but you want to have 65 pitchers on. So that was the decision there. Tellez wasn't sent down because he wasn't hitting. I mean, he's hitting a .185, but he's been hitting better the last little while. But you're 100% right. He wasn't going to DH because Springer was back. He wasn't going to play first base. He may never play first base again. And so he became the odd man out, but it wasn't performance related. I saw an article, some idiot wrote an article suggesting it was because his performance was poor. It had nothing to do with that. It was, we need another pitcher, you know, to sit in the bullpen and wait because we're using 6, 7, 8 a game.
Right. Because the starters still don't go deep enough. I mean, God almighty, everybody says Ryu's the greatest pitcher. Buck Martinez said he was a better pitcher, a more impressive pitcher than Garrett Cole and DeGrom and all. I'm sitting there going, what? He's never come close to 200 innings in his life. Ryu, God bless him, he's only going 5, 6 innings. You know, he hits 7 once or twice. Robbie Ray goes 4, 5, 6 innings. Like, a lot of these, and then they go 2 bullpen days a week, which uses it all up. the starters got to get going deeper to save the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened last year. The bullpen started great last year, remember? Yeah. And 30 games into the season,
they're all pooped.
They're worn to shreds.
Yeah, but a lot of that start, you know, that you have to concede. You can put some of the onus on the starting pitchers, try and throw more strikes so your pitch count doesn't get up. But managers don't let starting, this manager doesn't let his starting pitchers pitch. This organization is not interested in the guy that can throw a complete game. Forget a complete game. They're not interested in the guy who can go more than six innings.
Right.
You know, yeah. And the philosophy is less about pitch count today than it is about, want to guess?
Three times through the order.
Yeah. Am I the only old nutcase that thinks that's a bunch of hooey?
Something tells me Perk thinks the same way.
You got to watch the games. That's all. You watch the game. When a guy's cruising, leave him in.
That's not going to happen anymore.
Apparently, it happens with Kershaw. It happens with DeGrom. It happens with Gerrit Cole. Like some guys are allowed to work on a trouble, and that's how they become Kershaw and DeGrom and Gerrit Cole. You know what I mean? Like John Smoltz, who is, to my mind, the best guy on TV for talking about baseball. Smoltz is talking about this all the time on how pitchers aren't allowed to learn how to get out of trouble that they get in. As soon as you get two guys on base and here comes a guy that, you've got him out twice, but the third time you can't do it. They bring in the relief pitcher. And Smoltz is sitting there saying, how are these guys ever going to learn to get out of trouble if they don't get out of trouble?
Who was one of the great pitchers of all time, but had more horrible first innings than any other pitcher you remember? Roger Clemens.
I'm trying to think. Clemens was, it took him a while to find his stride.
Roger Clemens got batted around more in the first inning and then wound up when the night was over. He gave up one or two runs and had pitched a complete game. And, you know, his team won going away. It happened all the time.
I think Maddox had a little bit of high ERA first inning, I think, if I remember right.
Who's that?
Greg Maddox. I think he was the same way. But once he got locked into a rhythm and forget it.
But that's ancient history, guys. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Well, that's what we're whining about. We're whining about the philosophies of baseball that exist now. And you can take numbers that can show you anything. What, John?
Stop looking behind and look forward. Try to, you know, it's not what happens to you. It's what you do about it, you know? Fix it. What do you want to do?
Well, what I'm trying to do is educate the dum-dums that run the game right now. Because they're clearly a bunch of morons. And they don't know a damn thing about what they're talking about. From this exercise program that is causing more guys to get injured, to pitchers trying to throw 150 miles an hour when they can't do it, to babying the pitchers, to you can't go three times through the lineup. It's just, in my mind, it's just a bunch of poppycock. You got to have, you know, you can't scout a player by looking at a stat sheet. And you got to use the eye test, and either you can recognize talent or you can't recognize talent. And the game today has, the eye test has disappeared. Mm-hmm. It's all predetermined. It's on a piece of paper sitting in front of the manager, and the decisions that he makes are made days, weeks, months, years before the game is actually played.
Okay, so based on that, the Jays play 16 games in the next 17 days. Beyond the pitching staff, how many times are we going to see Springer? How concerned would you be about playing Springer one way or the other, whether it's in the field or at DH, in those 16 games?
Well, I don't know. If you're asking me, I don't know, guys. I don't know. Either you're healed or you're not healed, aren't you? I mean, I know that there's going to be some risk. But I don't pretend to know what his health situation is, but if he's okay to play, you play him, don't you?
Yeah, but they're being pretty vague about how his condition right now. And just the way that they go about things there, I really think that they're going to baby him. Part of the reason they let him play last night at DH was so that he could see what a fastball looks like again, a real fastball. And that he could recover today from a big night at DH because it's an off day today. And I think you'll see him back at DH again, probably on Friday. And then they'll mix it up. He'll be DH, day off, center field, until they know that that quad is okay, that he can run down a fly ball in center field, that he can leg out a double or whatever it is to show that quad is okay and he can recover from it. I think this front office is so worried about having George Springer go on a further extended trip to the injured list that they're going to really baby him along over the next couple of weeks.
Well, they did give him $150 million, so,
Yeah. He's made $2.7 million for 4 at-bats so far.
So the interesting thing is that how much more pressure would they be under? A, if the team was playing in Toronto, in front, and B, maybe in front of real people, real Blue Jays fans. How much pressure would they feel? Because this living on another planet concept of watching your home Major League Baseball team play, there's a lot more secrets, isn't there?
Well, but a lot more secrets. We're nitpicking, and we concede that, or at least I conceded at least, because the team's 10 and 11 or 11 and 12, whatever the hell they are. They're a game under 11
500. 11 and 12. They're 11 and 12.
They're a game under 500. They're about second in their division. They're not playing horribly. They're just not doing it the way we anticipated they would do it. And yeah, if the offense clicks in and the pitching doesn't fall apart, maybe this team will be even better. But right now there are question marks, a whole bunch of them, that need to be addressed.
Well, here's the biggest one. If you guys ask me, sorry, Bob, how many pitchers are in the starting rotation of the Blue Jays right now?
God only knows. As many, 14 probably. Well, oh no, yeah.
I think there's two. Oh,
no, I know what you mean. I get it.
There's two. Right. And one of them's already been on the injured list already anyway. So yes, the pitching has kept them in touch with the leaders in this division while we're waiting for the bats to come around. And a lot of that's been the bullpen, but how sustainable is that? Can that be sustained for 160 games? No. Can it be sustained for 100 games? I don't think so. Maybe it gets you to 40 or 50, but until they get a real rotation back and until those bats come to life, I'm not going to go with the John Shannon glass half full view of this team just yet.
Glass half full, Bobby.
Especially the way they play defense. The defense is still terrible. It's last year I said it was the worst Blue Jay defensive team I've ever seen. This isn't much better. I'll give Guerrero credit. He's better at first base this year than last year. Amazing what losing 40 pounds does, right? Like all of a sudden he's only baseball heavy now, which you can be. You know, Greg Luzinski was, Bob Horner was, Cecil Fielder was, throughout history, Miguel Cabrera, guys have been his size and they've been good players, good hitters. That's fine. The extra weight he blew has helped them a lot at first base. His footwork still is a problem, and there's so many bad throws. I'm scared he's going to get his arm broke.
Well, that's the biggest thing, and I think I agree with you. He's done an exceptional job of digging balls out of the dirt, considering how little experience he's had over there.
Did it again last night.
But the left side of the infield is gruesome.
So let me ask you this, Dave: when do you swap Semien into shortstop?
Well, to me, you do it right now because you only have Semien for this year. So you might just as well put him where he belongs, you know. And I had said this in spring training. I couldn't believe they were going to go with Bichette again. You know, God bless him. He's an offensive player, and you know, he makes occasional plays. But you got a shortstop job. You got to turn outs into outs. That's everybody thinks you got to make these fancy plays. You got to turn outs into outs. You know, when you don't, that's what demoralizes the pitcher. I mean, there's no such thing as a routine ground ball to the left side of the Toronto infield.
Yeah. Well, he makes mistakes on the routine ground balls, and I think virtually every mistake that he's made has been on a routine ground ball.
Bingo.
And, I think a lot of that is in his head, but nonetheless, yeah. I don't disagree with you. Look, we got to take a break. We'll come back and continue the conversation with Rob Longley, Dave Perkins, back after these messages. With Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun, who joins us from Medicine Hat, Dave Perkins is at home in Toronto, Shannon on the road again in Edmonton. And I'm here camped down in the big smoke. We were talking about Marcus Semien in terms of moving him to shortstop. I think it's an obvious. But what does it do for Bichette if you move him to second? Does it make him a better defensive player simply because the throw is shorter, simply because he has a split second longer, even if he bobbles the ball? Perk, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's always been the historical suggestion, that second is easier than short, which obviously it is. But remember, they also need a third base. I mean, the you know, poor Biggio is you can't put him there now after the trouble he's going through. And the left fielder, I mean, honestly, I asked somebody the other day, does Gurriel need glasses? Because he misjudged, what, five balls in three games or four games? A couple in Kansas, a couple in Boston. I mean, to me, that stuff demoralizes the pitching staff more than anything.
Well, and this is another topic I was going to get to. So, Longley, as I sit here, when Springer is ready to play, the odd man out in the outfield is, fill in the blank.
Boy, it may have to be Gurriel.
I agree.
Because of what Perk said, because of the fact that he isn't exactly hitting, and because of the fact that Randall Grichuk has played well, and Randall Grichuk is a much better right fielder than he is a center fielder. Teoscar Hernandez has said publicly that he doesn't want to be DH. Now, I don't know how much you listen to that, but he prefers to be engaged in the game when he's playing. I think that would be your natural outfield. And I think Gurriel, for the time being anyway, would be your odd man out.
So you put Hernandez in left?
By the way, I think the paycheck on the 15th and 30th would keep you engaged in the game, but that's just
one might think, yes.
Speaking of paychecks, doesn't Grichuk make $15 million or something? So
no, he was Grichuk's around 10.
On a contract, right?
Yeah, I think he's around 10.
Only 10, yeah.
Yeah. Well, whatever. But I mean, you're paying him. They signed him to a contract. You're going to play him.
Yeah, and you got a reliable guy out in right field, and a guy who at least so far this year is hitting a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I think that makes Gurriel the easy odd man at this point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's. That's sort of unfortunate because he has shown flashes, at least offensively, defensively as well. Every once in a while, I mean, he's got a pretty good arm. His judgment in the outfield is mostly horrible.
Yeah, you know, guys, I got to tell you, lots of this talk, we touched on him a little bit, but I'm really disappointed the president of the Rowdy Tellez fan club hasn't, you know, just stood on his soapbox and screamed for 10 minutes.
Why?
Who's that?
That's McCowan. McCowan, the king of the, he's the president of the Rowdy Tellez.
I understand the circumstances, John. The circumstances are they needed another pitcher or wanted another pitcher, and they had no place for Rowdy Tellez to play as long as Springer is going to DH. It's as simple as that. I don't think it has anything to do with Rowdy Tellez's performance. He was hitting like .180, but a couple of weeks ago he was hitting like less than 100.
Yeah, but .180 is fifth on this team.
Well, it's not far from that.
Can I shift gears for 1 minute? I'm so excited about something. I have to share it with you.
Yes.
And this is something that's going to be official in Major League Baseball, and you're going to hear about it for the first time right now. Okay? And because of Bumgarner had the 7-inning no-hitter this week that isn't a no-hitter, right?
Right.
So I said, now bear with me. A guy throws a perfect game for 9 innings, 27 up, 27 down, but it's nothing. So they go to the 10th and they start with a runner at second base, right? Ground ball, fly ball, run scores. Mm-hmm. Now he gets the last guy up. 30 batters up, 30 batters down. His team don't score. He loses 1-0.
But he doesn't throw a perfect game.
And the answer is?
Well, yes. What do you think the answer is? Well, officially.
The answer is yes.
Boys?
I agree. Yes. Got everybody out. All 30 for 30.
So that's what I think. So somebody I know in Major League Baseball, I asked this question. I said, what would happen in this official? So nobody has thought of it. And they had to go to Elias. And Elias had to make a ruling that, yes, it will be considered a perfect game. And I think they're going to put out some kind of announcement or something on it, but a clarification. But now this is the all-time conundrum. you can lose a perfect game.
I assume, Mr. Perkins, that therefore you are not a fan of this putting a runner on second base to start the 10th inning.
Well, I'm, you know what I mean?
Or do you care?
I'm not assuming. Quite frankly, I'm so sour on baseball the way it's played. The 3.5-hour games with nothing happens. The endless pitching changes. The endless balls in the dirt when you go 0-2. Like, baseball's, it's going to become a niche sport. I swear, young people aren't watching it. Who's going to sit and watch this crap for 3.5 hours with this endless parade of pitching changes? Well, and
listen, Dave, that is, I think that's Major League Baseball's biggest problem. Absolutely. You know, are we talking about a lost generation? Are we talking about two lost generations?
Yep.
I mean, learning, young people don't watch whole games, period. Doesn't matter what sport. Doesn't matter what sport. So all of a sudden, if you're comparing MLS, it's 2 hours, because let's not discount soccer in this continent. MLS is 2 hours, NBA's 2:15, NHL's 2:30, and they all think they're too long.
Yep.
And then you got Major League. The only one that can justify going 4 hours is the one that's the center of the gambling universe.
Yeah,
everybody's got their football,
because people are betting, they don't care how long it takes.
That's right. So this is baseball's biggest issue. They've got to find a way to get games back down to 2:45 and try to re-engage young people.
I don't know about the strike zone. That's what you do. You call the strike zone the way it's written. When we were kids, the pitch at the letters was a strike.
That's right. Armpits.
And now if it's above the belt, it's not a strike. That's a foot difference. So I say you start calling the strike zone, and every hitter goes up there knowing we're going to call the strike zone the way it's written, from the hollow of the knees to the letters, right? They used to say armpit. It actually used to say to the
ball. I said armpit because when I was growing up, that's what it was judged.
And I think it'll solve all of baseball's problems. Because now you got guys going up there swinging. None of this always trying to work a walk. His OBIP is such and such. He's trying to hit a walk. Boom. I get rid of visits to the mound.
Oh, yeah.
The guy's got trouble, get him out of the game.
How about trying to work with the players? Because this will be difficult with the players' union.
Exactly.
How about trying to work with the players to limit the size of a bullpen or a pitching staff? Well, so that you do have to find a way to stick with guys longer. Because
they brought in the three batter rule and it's blown up on. Like look at last night where the guy hits Harper in the face and the next pitch he hits Gregorius in the ribs and they can't take him out of the game. Because like the umpire wants to throw him out of the game and he can't. Because the guy's wild. He's thrown two pitches and maimed two players. Like he had to stay in for the next batter. This guy, he's just a kid. He's all upset and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, the three batter thing is changing the way the game's played too.
But you know what? Twice in the last week, Charlie Montoyo has used seven pitchers in a game. Sure. Twice. And there was no exceptional circumstances for it. It's just the way they do business now. And I mean, I still get irrationally mad during the winter, if I turn on a Maple Leafs game and see it ending at 9:35 and say, you know what, if I was at the Rogers Center, if I'm ever allowed to go to the Rogers Center again, that might be top seven. I've still got three more innings to go, you know? And it's a problem. It's a huge problem within the game. I agree. I don't know what the answer is, but seven pitchers being a routine thing for a manager, that's, you know, that's adds way too much time.
That I think that's one of the reasons Theo Epstein's been put into the commissioner's office is because the part of the business that he's created, you know, managing by numbers and they've got to rejig the game. They've got to re-understand it to make it more attractive for the regular and just as importantly for the casual fan. Cause the hardcore fan, like the hardcore fan that's watching this is saying, well, you guys are all old. All you do is you lament about the old things and how great things were. Yeah, I like baseball the way they are. I like the way baseball's played now. I like my analytics. But that's not the fan that they're trying to grab. They're trying to grab the person that might go to two games a year, that might watch on a Friday night. And it's difficult to watch. It really is difficult to watch at this point if you're a casual baseball fan.
Yep.
We all have, as you know, we all have shorter attention spans, and I'm not just talking about those of us of age group. The whole world has a short attention span, and we're not seeing 1 hour and 59 minute complete games anymore.
Where is Mark Burley when you need him?
Sure.
Well, or Doc Halliday through one or two of those, or and maybe actually through regularly through complete games in, if not under 2 hours, then just over 2 hours. We're not even remotely close to that. And that's the dilemma that I have, guys, is that while I agree, Perk, with your assessment, and I agree with John's evaluation, I agree with all of them, I don't know how you change this game when the people that are, you have to put rules in. And this is what baseball does not really want to do.
But there's too much dead time. There's too much dead time. Like when Rob, when you talk about when Charlie goes out to the mound seven times to make changes,
How do you stop that, John? You stop it by changing the way the game is thought of. And these guys will not do that.
Games without clocks, you know, the Olympics, you know, that great prehistoric monster that Perk hates, the Olympics had to put a clock on curling. And you know what? People started to like curling at the Olympics. And curling, the followings for curling around the world grew because the Olympics put a clock on curling. You know what? There's a time and a place to put a clock in baseball to kill the dead time. Forget about the game. The game's great. It's when the ball's not in play is the problem.
Well, let's start with this. Instead of watching slow managers waddle out to the mound and then sit there and chat for a while, make a signal from the dugout. I want you to change the pitchers. Well, managers don't go to the mound at all anymore.
That's what I'm saying. Dude, find ways to fix that.
Yeah. Guys, we can do this for as long as anybody wants. I'm sure maybe they don't want any more than what we gave them today. But we'll do it again. We thank you both for joining us from Parts Unknown. And stay safe. We'll see you soon.
Drive safe, Robbie. Gotcha.
Thanks, guys.
Rob Longley, Dave Perkins. Shani and I will be back after these messages. McCown and Shannon with you on the program. Where thanks to Longley and Perkins for joining us.
I love it when Perk gets involved, man. When he gets on one of those tangents about
the perfect game. You know,
people forget that for the longest time there, Dave was an official scorer too at Blue Jay games, right?
Yes, he was.
And so there's a true love of the game with Dave. And that's one of the reasons I love having him on. I loved it when we used to do the Hall of Fame ballot. And I love when he talks about how and this game is morphing into something that isn't necessarily very attractive right now.
Do you disagree with him?
I don't, but my concern is, and as I said earlier, we sound like four old guys lamenting the past. And to me, you know, there's nothing we can do about it other than we need to look forward and try to fix it.
The point of difference is we are not four guys who lamented the past the minute they started changing things. I've been open to every change that they've made in baseball. And I mean, most of them aren't rule changes. These are philosophical changes. You know me, I go back to the four-man rotation and let a guy pitch till his arm falls off.
By the way, I don't think very often in the show did we talk about the one key word that I think has hurt pitching so much in Major League Baseball, and that's velocity. Velocity.
Well, but we've talked about it many times. You're right, sure. And you're 100% right. This obsession with the radar gun and velocity has changed everything.
Come on, get with the times, Bob. Nobody says velocity. No, we don't say velocity. Velo. Velo.
It's velo now, yeah. Everything has an anachronism.
What's the velo like? Oh, I was going 60 kilometers in a 50 zone. Okay, there's the velo. You know?
So one of the things that's being discussed here that we didn't talk about, we should have, and it's my fault, is this notion now they're going to move the pitching rubber back a foot.
Well, our buddy Jason Stark talked about it when we had him on, and it's going to be in the Atlantic League for a year. So, but to me, that's a Band-Aid. To me, that's a band-aid.
Well, years ago, they've raised and lowered the pitching mound, depending on whether they thought that, you know, the higher the pitching mound, the more advantage to the pitcher. But
so,
if you want to do that, okay, but move it back a foot?
To me, that makes no sense either, because you raise or lower the pitching mound. What if you have a 5 foot eight pitcher versus a 6 foot 10 pitcher? What, I mean, come on now.
Well, you want to put a height restriction on pitchers now?
Well, no, but I mean, no, I want to keep the game human. I want to keep the game human. I want to stop doing, I want to go back to humanity of baseball rather than the science of baseball. That's what I want to do. And I want 2 hours and 45 minutes, because I don't want to be.
I want, you know, but in order to do that, you're going to have to change. It's not about, you can't just change rules. You're going to have to change mindset. And mindset is impossible to change in Major League Baseball right now. Mm-hmm. One quick thing before we go. The Toronto Blue Jays took a look at James Paxton as a possible member of their starting rotation. And I probably would have been one of the guys who would have said, yeah, go for it, because you need somebody else. Paxton out for the rest of the season. Is it, Tommy John, and may never pitch again.
Disaster in Seattle again. Yeah, just a disaster.
Excuse me. Well, all right, we'll let everybody go now. Do you want to promote who we have tomorrow, John?
We're going to talk to the head coach of the Dallas Stars, Rick Bonus, tomorrow. Because I want to know a little bit more about coaching in the pandemic. Because I don't think you can walk in the locker room and give a guy heck anymore. So.
All right, we'll do that. Hope you'll join us for that. Until then, for Shannon McCowan, goodbye, everybody.